Ici Londres. Les Français parlent aux Français.
People of Western Europe. A landing was made this morning on the coast of France by troops of the Allied Expeditionary Force. Deserted United Nations plan made in conjunction. I have this all been made in your own country. The hour all young and old have a part to play in the achievement of final victory. To members of side leaders, I say, follow the instructions you have received. To patriot resistance groups, I say, continue, but do not needlessly endanger your lives. Wait until I give you the signal to rise and strike the enemy. The day will come when I shall need your united strength. Until that day, I call on you for the hard task of discipline and restraint. Citizens of France, I am proud to have again under my command the gallant forces of France. They will play a worthy part in the liberation of their homeland. Because on the soil of your country, I repeat to you with even greater emphasis my message to the peoples of other occupied countries in Western Europe. Follow the instructions of your leaders. A premature uprising of all Frenchmen may prevent you from being of maximum help to your country in the critical hour. As Supreme Commander of the Allied Expeditionary Force, there is imposed on me the duty and responsibility of taking all men of the war. Prompt and willing obedience to the orders that I shall issue is essential. Effective civil invited by Frenchmen. All persons must continue in their present duties unless otherwise instructed. Those who have made common cause with the enemy and so betrayed. When France is liberated from her oppressors, you yourselves will choose your representatives and the government under which you wish to live. In the course of this campaign for the final defeat of the enemy, you may sustain further loss and damage. Tragedy are part of the price of victory. I assure you that I shall do all in my power to mitigate your hardships. I know that I can count on your steadfastness now, no less than in the past. The heroic deeds of Frenchmen who have continued the struggle against the Nazis and in France and throughout the French Empire have been an example and an inspiration to all of us. This campaign in Western Europe. Great battles lie ahead. I call upon all who love freedom to stand with us now. Keep your faith staunch. Our arms are resolute. Together.
The build-up is going well. I spent some hours on the beaches this morning watching men, food, ammunition and supplies come streaming in. It's a combined operation between Navy, Army and Merchant Navy. The effort is enormous, the results in some cases staggering. I talked to the principal beachmaster on one sector, a tall, bearded naval lieutenant commander. Our conversation was punctuated by the orders he gave to craft, shouted through a loud hailer. Keep to windward there, 1047. Keep clear of the duck entrance. Next moment, he was dictating signals to be flashed by lamp along the beach. He was answering army officers, queries about the tide and obstructions. But he was right on top of the job. His men, Royal Navy, busy clearing wrecked landing craft and marking with red flags new traffic lanes through the shallows. And up and down those lanes, almost as though on conveyor belts, the regular steady stream of ducks was moving. Hundreds of them. They went out empty from the shore, changed from wheel drive to propeller a few yards out, and made tracks, or rather wakes, for the merchantmen lying 2 or 3 miles out to sea. Down the next door lane, they were coming inshore, reversing the process and driving their piled cargoes of sugar crates, tires, petrol, shells up the coast road to the depots.
We're on our way out south from the coast, crossing over towards Normandy with a wing of the patrol and the protection of the Allied armies on the beaches and inland. This must be the first he has been able to call you from a formation of The only reason that I'm here, a Mosquito, which can carry us, sit ourselves onto the back of the fighter formation. We're heading straight out now. A very lovely sight the Spitfires are on our port side, ranged in their ranks of three. Now, as we fly closer into the coast of France, we're flicking the formation of Spitfires, hanging there so perfect, almost motionless in the wonderful clear air. Down below us on the surface of the glistening sea, the everlasting procession of ships going to France. There they are in a line with their silver wakes coming out behind them. So stately, and apparently to us so slow. We're flying at about 250 miles an hour, straight in towards France. Spitfires on the left behind us. And somewhere with us, one other Mosquito, gone out of sight at the moment, who's flying with us as another extra machine with the formation. But we're yearning things, but I find it infiltrated and recreated where our bombs have fallen in the past. Here is the new thing for established, the magnet. We're diving down and coming in over it right now. Flying straight in the distance, at circle, is the battlefront. I can see the fires are burning in every, and the ship's firing inshore. And we're flying so low now that I can see individual anti-aircraft guns. There are some cows sitting in a field. I'm describing them all as they go past the port side window of this Mosquito cockpit. More guns, and their transport on the roads. And at that road junction, just below us, there's a military policeman waving them on. Do you know, I can even see his red cap from here, but he's wearing that and not his tin hat. They're all our chaps driving on the right-hand side in the continental style.
At first sight, everything round the beaches still looks chaotic. Perhaps it's because there's still so much wreckage and litter lying about. Smashed up buildings, tangles of wire, heaps of driftwood, enormous bomb craters, waterlogged landing craft just pushed out of the way, wrecked vehicles piled on top one of another. But then you see that in fact, and despite appearances, everything is thoroughly under control. To prove it, there are those unending columns of men and vehicles pouring inland in perfect order. You join one of the columns. There are fenced off areas on each side of you, marked here and there with signboards, German signboards, bearing a skull and crossbones, and the word Minen in red. Minen, mines. Actually, many of those so-called mined areas have been found to be quite innocuous. It's said that the local commander simply stuck up these signs to impress Rommel when he came on a visit of inspection just before we landed. Anyway, you go on, up the track. It's not a road, just a broad pathway that our bulldozers have cut running inland from the beaches. It goes through somebody's cornfield, through somebody else's back garden, through a farmyard. There's a wire mesh track laid down. The heavy vehicles stick to that. You pass a big signboard. It says, Infantry Assembly Area straight on. Only 15 minutes from here. Keep on marching and smiling. Then suddenly, you find yourself on a metal road. There's open country on both sides, not a hedge anywhere. Fields full of tall green corn. Men standing two in their gun pits on the watch for enemy raiders. Clouds of dust all over the plain. Every field thickly studded with wooden posts to prevent airborne landings. The French can have them for firewood now. Military policemen at every crossroads wave you on. You're getting into more wooded country now. Vehicles are parked in the fields under the hedges. There are army signs everywhere. DID, Waterpoint, CCS, REME, and so on. You go through village after village where people are apparently just leading normal lives. They smile at you as they pass. Some give the V sign. There are troops bathing in that river. Others standing on watch in case any French women come in sight. There are cows grazing in the fields, sleeping too, even at midday. A friend of mine says that's because the German planes keep them awake all night. Men are stretched out in the sun and sleeping too. Tired, grimy-looking men, grimy with the dust of battle still on their uniforms. They've just come back from the lines. Now, you're getting near the guns. The road's becoming untidier again. Trees are down. Buildings are in ruins. Overhead wires are trailing around. The surface of the road is pitted with craters. The din of the battle grows louder. There are wrecked vehicles overturned in the ditches. An odd tank here and there, burnt out. No civilians to be seen, and few soldiers either. And those few are wearing steel helmets and keeping well under cover of hedges and banks. Not many vehicles about, and those that you do see all seem to be coming your way and batting along all out. A A military policeman steps out from the hedge and stops you. Not wise to go any further, there's a couple of Jerry tanks down in that wood on the left. You've arrived. This is the front.
I'm lying down at full length here in the cornfield. Just in the hedges around me, I can see many men taking shelter behind the banks wearing their steel helmets while this terrific barrage goes on around us.
I've just stepped off one of the motor torpedo boats of the Light Coastal Forces, which last night bored in north of Cherbourg and engaged enemy E-boats attempting to filter through to the beachhead anchorage. At the briefing yesterday afternoon, the young skippers of these crafts were told that the E-boats had to be engaged and sent to the bottom. Those were the instructions in a nutshell. Shortly afterwards, the MTBs were scorching out across the channel, sitting on their tails, sending out that well-known fountain of a bow wave and testing their guns. The skipper of this boat is a lieutenant commander, DSO, and last night I saw why. That man's a fire eater. He just doesn't know what duck means. It wasn't long after midnight when one of his exploratory star shells revealed the low silhouettes of a batch of E-boats. He opened fire with everything he had, and that's plenty. But in the darkness, the enemy got away. The second battle occurred under a newly risen moon, and the E-boats got the drop on us. It was a short, sharp, running fight. The odds were at least 5-2 in the enemy's favor, and once again we lost them. The third and last tussle came about 4 in the morning. It was a honey. I can't begin to describe to you what the decks of one of these little fighting boats is like while a thing like that's going on. The thud and concussion and chatter of guns just beggars description. There were 6 E-boats. We were 2 at that juncture. Tracer was sailing just over our heads and fore and aft of the ship. Our fire was directed at the second in line of the enemy, and a murderous fire it was. I was standing beside a 19-year-old gunner whose rich Scots accents leave no doubt about his native heath. As he poured his fire in at the enemy, a little lick of flame shot from her hull, and then bigger tongues of flame. My little Scots gunner had his teeth clenched and his thumbs on the firing buttons. As he saw the flame, he ground out, "Burn, you unprintable name, you burn," and burn she did. By the time she was a completely enveloped funeral pyre, the other 5 E-boats had withdrawn into the night. In the glare cast by those flames, they must have been able to see us, but they had had enough. Ammunition and signal flares were going up from the blazing hull.
2 hours ago, I was looking at Caen Cathedral, standing up gray and soft in the light of the sun. We were flying into France at 200 miles an hour, to attack an important concentration of German tanks of the 21st Panzer Division gathered in the path of the Allied armies advancing beneath us. It was the first daylight operation of the British tactical bombers since D-Day, and if successful, might have important effects on the progress of the land battle. We had left the coast of England, flying in a tight formation, so tight that I could see the features of the pilot flying the Mitchell bomber on our right hand. Above us, behind, in front, and below, the Spitfires escorting us were flashing by, wheeling and banking and rising and falling as they scoured the sky for the Luftwaffe. There was cloud at first, white woolly cloud over which we flew in the brilliant sun, but as we approached the channel it broke into patches, and through a big gap I saw the shining blue sea. Not an empty sea, but a sea crowded, infested with craft of every kind. Little ships, fast and impatient, scurrying like water beetles to and fro and leaving a glistening wake behind them. Bigger ships in stately, slow procession, with the sweepers in front and the escort vessels on the flank. It was a brave, oh, an inspiring sight. We are supplying the beaches all right, no doubt of that. We flew on, southwest, and I could see France and Britain, and I realized how very near to you all at home in England is this great battle in Normandy. It's a stone's throw across the gleaming water, and as we left the thick cloud behind us, I saw it all as a mighty panorama, clear and etched in its detail. There were the supply ships, the destroyers, the torpedo boats, the assault craft, leaving England. Halfway over was another great flotilla, and near it a huge, rounded, ugly capital ship, broadside on to France. There, in the distance, was the Cherbourg Peninsula, Cherbourg itself revealed in the sun. And there, right ahead now, as we reset course, the beaches. Dozens, scores, hundreds of craft lying close inshore, pontoons and jetties being lined up to make a new harbour where 6 days ago there was an empty stretch of shore. There were the vehicles, making their way inland. A great fire burning to starboard. The guns in action there, too, jets and puffs of bursting shells. We were sweeping inland, swinging round again, now heading straight for the road junction and the tiny village where the panzers were sheltering. No time now to watch for enemy fighters. Let the flashing, wheeling Spitfires do that. We watched the ground, intently. We were over the German army. Our own lay behind. I saw two trucks driving down a road. But behind us, a Dutch pilot saw a long column of German transport moving up. From an enemy aerodrome to starboard came puffs of flak, below and behind us, not near enough to worry about. France was green and glistening. I glanced across at the pilot of the next Mitchell. He was having a good look down, too. Then we went in, straight as a die. We were very near the extreme forward Allied units, and I wondered if they were watching us. We were quite a pretty picture. The bomb doors were open, and before I expected it, our bombs were away. And at the same moment, all the other Mitchells following in our formation let go, and I saw the green and brown bombs sailing down. "Watch 'em," said the wing commander. I was watching, over his shoulder as he banked to port. We waited. What a long time bombs take to go down. And then there was a shout. The whole area of the road junction had erupted. Fountains of earth and smoke and dust and flame shot up and hung in the evening sunlight like poplar trees. The village and the German armor were hidden in the chaos. "Bang on," said the wing commander. "Bang on," said the voice of the Dutch navigator in my ears. And we turned for home. Out over the beaches, the ships again, and Caen lying there so still. No sign of fighting in the city, no sign of damage to the cathedral. And then back over the water, past Le Havre with its pattern of docks and wharves, back over the channel and over the sheltering clouds again. But not before I had one glorious view of the home coastline stretching for miles to the east and west. You know, Shakespeare was exactly right. This country is a jewel set in the Silver Sea. But the Silver Sea today is as the poet could never have seen it, alive with the ships of Britain, America, and our allies, and ours to command.
A little further up the road, and a bent old woman in a black shawl bids us good day. She stayed in bed through it all, she says, but the ceiling fell in on top of her, and now she's no habitable home. "So much the worse, monsieur, but it can't be helped." And she wanders on down the street. We come into the market square. The little restaurant au gourmet has no spécialité alimentaire to offer today, but Monsieur le Patron stands smiling a bit ruefully outside his broken shop window while a French tricolour drapes down from the floor above. Our troops, tin-hatted and dusty, are everywhere about, clearing debris, mingling with the inhabitants, passing through in truckloads. A sergeant falls in his section just in front of the war memorial, a plain bronze obelisk, quite undamaged, with Bernier's last war roll of honour. Behind it, the church has a shell hole through its tapering steeple. And we learn that a few hours before, two snipers were winkled out from it with the help of a naval gun. We learn, too, that more snipers are about in the town, and we're advised to go warily. Inside, the church is almost undamaged, and a mounting heap of fresh white flowers adorns a shrine, while a statue of Joan of Arc in shining armour looks down from a niche in the wall. We leave the market square and walk along a roadway to the east. There, in one of the big gardens, are three British privates stalking through the bushes with rifles at the ready. Snipers suspected, the sentry tells us. But in the orchard beyond, a flock of young lambs are frisking and playing quite unconcerned. There's a notice now on the roadside. Roads and verge cleared to next village. We walk on, past some of our signalmen who are running wires between the telephone poles from which the lines are dangling in a tangled skein. We find a holiday camp at the fringe of the town, obviously used latterly as a German barracks, with small arms ammo left there, beside piles of mine warning notices, and under a bell that's marked, in German, gas alarm. There's a cow munching quietly in a stall, a donkey beside it, and across the courtyard, rows of rabbit hutches with their occupants, unaware perhaps of being spared their intended fate as a German dinner dish. The broken windows of the straggling buildings creak and rattle in the breeze. Perhaps, with snipers about, it's not quite such a healthy place. We move on. And suddenly, where the houses thin out, we catch a glimpse of the anchorage. From the shore side, it looks more than ever crowded. In fact, there are so many ships and craft that there's not much sea at all to look at. We hitchhike now on a duck going west to Courseulles. It seems less damaged in our bombardment than Vernier. Not that that was by any means demolished, but here there are many more houses quite intact. It's a bigger town, of course, with a little port, and there are more inhabitants to be seen about. Again, there's military traffic driving in convoys through the streets, driving on the right-hand side of the road, continental fashion. The inhabitants, as before, give us smiles and waves and bonjour. A priest offers us food or lodging. There's a small boy poking his head through the bars of a wrought-iron gate, munching away at a piece of bread spread liberally with army ration jam. We wander on through the town. Life doesn't seem so very abnormal. A barber invites us in for a shave, and just at that moment, the guns from one of our cruisers in the bay open up and shells go hurtling overhead. We think they might unsteady his hand. We decline politely and wander on, gradually making our way back towards the beaches again.
The curé of this little Normandy church, 2 or 3 miles from Caen, wants me to say how sorry he is about these bells. His village has only just been liberated, and it's taken until yesterday to clean up the many German snipers left in hiding. Poured the bells of his church, ringing in celebration of the village's freedom, he asked me to wait for a week. And this is why. They used to have a very lovely little carillon in this church. Only 3 bells, but they were very proud of it. And many of the villagers were expert bell ringers. But when the German snipers hid in the square tower of the church, and for 2 nights they were very troublesome, at last they gave themselves up. But it was found that they had smashed the big bell of the carillon. Monsieur le Curé promised that if I would only wait a week, he would have the big bell repaired and you could hear the full carillon. But he added that in any case, they were going to ring the remaining 2 bells at once. And I thought that you would rather hear the bells now, even though the big one has been smashed by the Germans, to let you know that the people of Bration, the church bells are ringing and the villagers are going to mass to give thanks for their freedom.